Hello everyone, and welcome to Spotlight. Spotlight is an event on our site in which we interview a member of For the People and learn a little more about their life and life experiences. Before we do get started, I'd like to thank Dennis and Terry for recording our Spotlight program for us today for the purpose of archiving. And I'll remind everyone that archives of Spotlight programs are available for your convenience by going to the front page, clicking on the Galaxy of Stars link, and in there you'll find a link for Spotlight. Before we get started, I'd like to ask everyone to hold your comments and questions for our guests until the end of the interview. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our very own country music Mar to introduce her guest for today. Mar?
Well, thanks, Becky, and welcome to everyone who came in for Spotlight. This is going to be a very, very special presentation, as they all are. We have so many wonderful, talented people here on For the People. And this gentleman is one of our wonderful musicians who has joined us in recent months, and he's just added so much to the site. I'd like to make welcome to Spotlight this morning, Mr. Slim Short. And Slim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mara. I'm proud to be here. And I think when we started out, you told me when we started out you'd like for me to do one of my numbers. And this is a song that I recorded back in 1974 with a young lady named Angie Inge, and at the time she was 13 years old. And this song was written by Dolly Parton and Bill Owens. And Dolly Parton had put it on one of her albums with Porter Wagoner, but she never did a single on it. So me and Angie did it, and I hope you enjoy it. It's called Tomorrow is Forever. So that was from 1974. Hope you enjoyed it. By the way, that song went up to number 10 on the charts, one of the few successes I had. Back to you, Mar.
Oh, man, that was a great song. And now that I hear it, I do remember hearing it on a Dolly album. I just hadn't been able to remember what song it was, but that was a great recording, and I'm so glad you shared it with us. And I'm sure that that little girl was awfully thrilled to be able to do that at that age. That's cool. Well, we're going to start out from the beginning like we usually do. And Slim, where were you born?
I was born in a little town in South Carolina called Loris, and I'm sure nobody's heard of it. It's about 13 miles from Ocean Drive Beach, South Carolina, and right down the strand from Myrtle Beach.
Cool. And did you have any brothers and sisters?
Got one brother, Charlie, and he's living in South Carolina now.
Cool. Well, you told me, I was kind of asking you about incidences that stood out in your mind during early childhood. Oh, first of all, I wanted to ask you also about your vision loss, and was it from birth, and what caused it?
Yes, I was blind from birth, and it was caused by congenital cataracts. And I have about 10% vision in my right eye and none absolutely in my left eye. And I used to have a little in my left eye, but from surgery it had so much scar tissue till it went away. But it was congenital cataracts, and it was from birth.
Okay. Do you remember anything about the first time that you discovered that you weren't like everybody else?
Well, it wasn't quite as the same for me as it was for everybody else, because my mother and my grandmother all were blind, and we lived in a household where we outnumbered the sighted people.
Wow, that's interesting. So, were their blindness caused from the same thing?
Exactly. There were several members, aside from my mother and grandmother, I also had an uncle that had the same condition.
Wow, that is interesting. That didn't come up in our preliminary. So you actually were raised in a world where people were already adapting to what it was like to be blind. Do you remember, I'm not sure how old you are, and if you want to divulge that, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. But do you remember anything that your mom did in her house to adapt it to being a blind person?
You know, she didn't really do a lot. I mean, she just got used to where, and we all did, where everything was, and we knew, and we just did, went along with our lives like normal people. There is a little story that you might be interested in. We had a cousin that lived with us in the same house, and he was sighted. And he stayed with us from the time he was like 2 weeks old. But he had been around blind people so long until when he started school. His teacher called my mother into the school to talk to her because he was in school acting like a blind person, feeling his way around the room, and I thought that was funny.
That's great. I have written on here baseball bat incident. Now, does that bring back any memories?
Yeah, the school I went to, I started school in South Carolina at the South Carolina School for the Blind, and one thing that happened to me in school, it was pretty tragic, was that, well, see, we had the deaf people in the same school that I was going to, and they, of course, they played baseball and stuff, and I wandered out on the baseball field and took a Louisville slugger right side of the head.
Whoops, that probably wasn't the smartest move in the world. The other thing that I found really interesting from your school days was that the school for the deaf and the school for the blind were integrated. And what unique challenges did that present?
Well, main thing is communication with the deaf people. We actually had some deaf people in our dorms, and communicating with them was a big challenge.
Were you in the same rooms with deaf people?
At times. See, our dorms generally had maybe 30, 40 beds in one room. You know, it was a huge room. And, of course, from time to time, there was deaf people in the room, in the same dorm room with us.
Did you integrate together as far as friendships were concerned, or was it kind of a little cliquish thing where the blind people kind of stayed in their own little clique, and the deaf people did the same?
For the most part, we sort of stayed to ourselves. There was a few people that in the deaf department that had some hearing that we were able to communicate with, a degree of hearing, but for the most part, it was we sort of had our own little niche, and the blind went their way and the deaf went their way.
Did you learn some sign language and things like that to be able to communicate?
Yes, I used to do a little sign language, probably forgot it all by now, and then when I did communicate with some of the deaf folks, they had a way of signing into our hands in a way where we could tell, for the most part, what they were saying.
Was going away to school a traumatic experience for you, or did you adjust pretty well?
It was pretty bad, because I was raised out way out in the sticks on a tobacco farm. I knew every crick and nook, and when they come to get me to take me to school, I started running. It took them about 4 hours to catch me.
Oh, my. So you really didn't want to go. I suppose, you know, when everything's familiar and stuff, I remember those days, too, and you go to a place where you don't know anybody and everything's unfamiliar, and it's kind of scary. Were you involved in any school activities, like music-related activities or anything, when you were a child?
Oh, I studied music in school from the time I started till the time I finished. And as far as other activities, I was involved in some gym activities, and I won the red ribbon for the high broad jump and the broad jump, stuff like that.
Oh, so you were athletic as well as musical, and that's pretty cool. So when did you kind of decide that you wanted to really focus on music as a career?
Well, I knew that from the time I was old enough to know anything, that I wanted music to be a part of my life and in a big way.
Now, did your mom and grandma read Braille?
My mother went to school. She read Braille, and she also played the piano some. My grandmother, believe it or not, never went to school.
That's interesting. And she was totally blind or had a severe sight problem?
Well, my mother had about the same vision I did, I guess, for the most part, around 10%. My grandmother had just a little bit more than the rest of us, but she was severely visually impaired.
Now, obviously, Slim isn't your real name. So, at what age did you acquire that name?
I started playing in a band when I was a teenager, and we were playing around Myrtle Beach, and as a matter of fact, around the Bowery. And people started. I'm real tall. Of course, you wouldn't know that because you can't see me, but I'm real tall and skinny. And a lot of people started, just to be smart aleck, calling me Shorty, and some of them would call me Slim. Then they started calling me Slim Shorty, and for long, in a year or so, it was just Slim Short, and it's just hung with me ever since, and I think I was about 17 at the time.
Huh, that's interesting. That was a pretty good stage name, though, wasn't it?
It stuck.
Now, I have here on my notes that you'd been involved with music from 3 years old. What did you do when you were three?
Well, when I was like 3 or 4 years old, my little cousin and my mother and I used to sing in church, and I actually started playing on the guitar when I was about 4 or 5 years old.
Did you teach yourself, or did you actually take lessons?
I taught myself to play the guitar. I studied piano and several other instruments in school, but I actually taught myself to play the guitar.
Did you learn Braille music?
Yes, I did. I haven't read it in so many years, so I don't know if I still could or not, but I did read Braille music.
Did you struggle with Braille music?
Not too much, because when I first started taking music, my instructor was blind also, and having a blind instructor, that's a plus.
Well, I know I had a difficult time with it. I never could quite understand it, so, and usually I could hear something faster and learn it a lot faster than I could read the Braille music. So I suppose, you know, that you studied classical music and things like that, and like so many of us musicians who wanted to kind of branch out, did you have any repercussions from branching out against your teacher's will?
Oh, I'll say, hey, I used to get it in the practice room. Instead of playing classical, I'd be playing country, and my blind instructor would go in there with her yardstick and slap my hands.
Ooh, boy. That wouldn't be too well thought of these days, would it?
No, they'd get in trouble doing it these days, but I tell you, they had better ways of raising kids back then than they do now. I sort of really get upset when I hear how they, you know, how they do kids these days.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure your fingers weren't impaired from being rapped with a ruler once in a while.
No, and when my daddy whipped my butt, it didn't hurt me too much either, but you can't do that anymore either.
So what other instruments did you play besides piano and guitar?
I played in the school orchestra. I played clarinet, and I also messed with the trumpet a little bit. And just about all the instruments I played, played around just a little bit with.
Do you play any of those instruments now?
Mostly all I've got around here now is a bunch of keyboards and a couple guitars. I've got a couple of guitars that are classics, and they're valuable, and I still take them out and play them occasionally.
Tell me about your first band experience and how that all took place.
Well, I was working at a place temporarily, didn't have a musical job at the time, and somebody from the office come and told me that somebody from Little Theater wanted to speak to me on the phone. So it turned out not to be the Little Theater, but a band member from a band that wanted me to do a gig with them on Saturday. And so I did, and they hired me in the band. I wound up taking over the band because he got out of it.
Did you play guitar or keyboard in that band?
I mostly played keyboards because I was better at keyboard because of starting on the piano. I was better at piano and keyboards than I was anything else, so that's what I mostly played in the band.
And how long were you in that band?
I think that band lasted about a year, and then I went on to other musicians and started my own band. That was actually what was left of the Roy Curry's band, and excuse me. And I wanted my own band, so I just went ahead and started a band from scratch about a year later.
How old were you when you had that experience?
I think by the time I got my first band that I picked out myself, I was between 18 and 19.
So you had already graduated from high school by this time.
Actually, I was playing while I was still going to school a lot of the time.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And did you go to any further education?
I went to King's Business College, and I took some advanced courses in music like that.
Did you take anything away from that experience that you've been able to use throughout your life?
Well, the things I learned at King's Business College, of course, helped me run a good band and run it as a business, because I had payrolls just like you have in a regular business. So that was very helpful in that respect.
So after you left the business college, then you just went full-time into music?
Yes, I was figuring it out one time, and I think I was in music, full-time. Rosemary and I do a show from time to time now, but not near the work we used to do. I think I was in it full-time for about 43 years.
My goodness, that's a long track record, and you certainly have the talent to warrant being in music for that long. What was your first recording experience? Was that the one that you played at the beginning of the show?
No, the first record I had out, and I hope y'all excuse me because I've got a little laryngitis today. The first record I had out actually was, I think it was actually done in 59 or 60. It was called Teach Me How to Rock and Roll.
Oh, so you got into the rockabilly scene too.
Yeah, I was into that's what I was in initially. I got out of the what you call 50s and 60s rock about the mid 60s because to me rock got a little too radical for me, and so I went back to my roots of country music.
Well, we're certainly glad you did that because you do country so well. And how did you meet your wife?
Now that's a little story. We were talking about that the other night. I was working at a place called what was it called? The Golden Ox. And she came down there. She told everybody at the office where she worked that she was going down to see Slim Whitman. And the office said, well, is he still alive? She said, well, I think so. He's playing at the Golden Ox. But she came in, I met her that night, and I told her I was going to marry her before the year was up.
And did your prediction come true?
It did. I met her in April, married her in December.
Yeah, that was just before the year was up. That's great. That's a great story. Obviously, she found out you weren't Slim Whitman because you didn't sing high enough.
No, I didn't. I didn't have a high enough voice, but did you know Slim Whitman actually lives not far from Jacksonville?
Oh, is that right? I didn't know if... I knew he had done a lot of TV albums and things like that. Are there any stories from your road career that you'd like to relate? Anything that would be embarrassing or funny or anything like that?
Well, no, except I spent a lot of time in Nashville, and there was lots of crazy musicians in Nashville. And I remember us getting drunk, sitting on the sidewalk and picking the guitars. And you couldn't get by with that now. Cops would come by and have a drink with us. Now they'd put us in jail, you know, but... And George Jones, I got to know him real well. He was right there sitting on the sidewalk picking with us.
Wow. So did you actually try your hand at being a Nashville recording artist for a while?
Yes, that's why I recorded those records, and that's why I got that number 10. That was one of my, well, I guess getting a number 10 record is not any big deal, but it was for me. But after I started getting up in years a little bit, I just figured that, you know, it's too late to really push it. And you know, start getting a little age on you, you don't feel like you don't have the energy that you have when you're young.
Now, did you have any children of your own?
I got one stepkid, and he lives in Daytona.
You said that you got drunk with George Jones. I guess that doesn't surprise me. What other celebrities have you worked with?
Well, there's a story I want to tell you about George Jones, if you don't mind, before then. He used to have a bar in Nashville called, let me see what it was called. Gosh, can't remember now. Oh, the Possum Holler Club. And I was up there one time, and, of course, he had a manager. He didn't run his own bar, you know. We were in there drunk, and we were so drunk we thought the band was, sound was coming off the ceiling. So me and him were sitting in a chair looking up toward the ceiling, and his manager come and run us off.
Sounds like you were quite a rebel rouser there, Slim.
It was a lot of fun. But, I got to know a bunch of stars because my band fronted, I guess you call it fronting. We come on and do a little show before the stars come on, you know, and in some cases we even actually backed them up. But I got to know Billy Joe Spears and Farron Young and Webb Pierce. That's just three of the ones that I got to know.
Oh, neat. Yep, I did a lot of that stuff as well when I was in Minnesota playing music. So know exactly what that's like, and it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Webb Pierce was, I don't know if you ever met him or not, but he was sort of a character.
Who was that? I'm sorry, my jaws was talking over you.
Webb Pierce, I just wondered if you ever got to know him. He was a character.
No, I guess the closest I got to him was his guitar-shaped swimming pool that he had in Nashville there. Not at his house, but the one that he had built. I can't remember exactly where it was. Maybe you do, but I never did get to meet him.
I was thinking it was at his house. I never did see it, so I don't know. I was thinking he had it at his house.
Well, he did have one there, but he also had built one. I think it was, I can't remember if it was in the Opryland complex or if it was near the old Ryman. I forget exactly where it was, but I remember that we paid to have our names engraved on it and stuff like that. It was one of those touristy things, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry Opryland closed down because that was a nice place to hang around. Of course, my days in Nashville was hanging around Music Row and the old Ryman Auditorium and those clubs in that area.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Possum Holler. In fact, I think I was in there once when we went and visited Nashville during Fanfare. I have here embarrassing moment with Farron Young. What was that all about?
That was when he was real young. Farron Young was, I don't know, he's probably in his late 20s or early 30s then, and he was doing a show in Nashville. No, not Nashville. Asheville, North Carolina. And the bus driver had parked his bus across somebody's driveway, and the guy come out of his house cussing Farron Young out, so Farron Young jumped off the bus and gave him a whooping.
Yeah. He was one of those little bandy rooster type. I kind of got the impression that you didn't mess with him.
No, he didn't. He was a lot of fun, but when he got a snoot full, he could be a handful.
Yeah. Yeah, he treated us really well. We worked with him back in 87, and he and his organization treated us really well, but I've heard some interesting stories.
Yeah, you always hear stories about Farron Young. George Jones, too. There's so many stories about him. It's really hilarious.
So after you and Rosemarie got together, then you started running your own show and your own band?
Well, I run my own band a long time before then, but when I disorganized my band after about, my road band after about 20 years in about 77, and after that, because my health got real bad, and the doctor told me I needed to take a rest from it, so that's when I moved to Florida in 77. I started playing piano bars and stuff like that for a while. And then when I got up, Rosemarie plays keyboard. And when I got up with her, me and her just did a duo on the keyboards and did shows like that.
Does she sing as well?
Oh, yeah. I played some of her stuff on Cabaret before.
I guess I missed out on that privilege. I'll have to make sure I catch that sometime.
Next time I'm on, I'll pull some stuff out that she's singing on.
All right. Well, I guess that's a good segue to talking about FTP involvement and how you heard about us.
Well, I got a friend that works for that company, Maxi AIDS. Works for Maxi AIDS, and he's his name's Harold Weber. He's supposed to be a member himself. I've never called him on here, but he was the one that was telling me about it one day and told me to go on it, that I probably would like it. But I lost track of what his nickname was, and I've never heard him actually on it, but he says he's a member.
So what did you think when you heard that you could voice chat with people all over the world?
Well, it was a sort of, I didn't understand how it worked, and what I did, I just came on the site and listened a lot before I actually tried to talk on it, and I still don't really understand how you can do that, but it's great that you can.
Whoops. well, I know. I was kind of amazed, too, when I found out that a person could do that, and it certainly has broadened my spectrum as far as making new friends and learning more computer things and stuff like that. It's just been a great, great experience. Well, that's all I have for my notes, and I wonder if there's anything else in your life that you would like to address before we go to another song and then questions from members.
No, the best thing that happened to me was Rosemarie, and we'll be celebrating our 15th anniversary in December the 11th.
Well, cool. That's wonderful. Do you have any advice for people who are musicians and are kind of aspiring to be in a position where you were for a while there?
If you want to be a professional musician, you got to take the hard knocks along with it, and it's no guarantee you'll ever be. For every 1,000 musicians, if one makes it, he's lucky, and I'd say that the odds are probably closer to 10,000, and you've got to be devoted enough to stick with it. And just go as far as you can in it.
Yep, that's kind of the way it was for me, too. I had aspirations of being a musician and recorded in Nashville, but never went anywhere. And it's really neat that you got a number 10 hit. That's great.
That's the only time I think that it ever happened. I think I had a couple that might have been like number 40, number 30, or maybe even number 50 or something like that, but number 10 was the best.
Did you actually record in Nashville, or did you record elsewhere?
I recorded a couple in Nashville. A lot of them were done from satellite studios, you know, companies that had studios in other cities.
So I assume you have another song lined up. Tell us about that and play the tune for us.
Well, I like country music, and I also like bluegrass music, so I thought for this last song I'd play a bluegrass song with a little tempo to it. I like it's called Rolling in My Sweet Baby's Arms.
I'm rolling in my sweet baby's arms. I'm rolling in my sweet baby's arms. Lay around the shack till the mail train comes back, and I'll roll in my sweet baby's arms. Ain't gonna work on the railroad. Ain't gonna work on the farm. Lay around the shack till the mail train comes back, and I'll roll in my sweet baby's arms. I'm rolling in my sweet baby's arms. I'm rolling my sweet baby's arms. Lay around the shack till the bell train comes back, and I'll roll in my sweet baby's arms. Where were you last Saturday night while I was staying home in jail? You were walking the streets with another man, wouldn't even go my bail. I'm rolling my sweet baby's arms. I'm rolling my sweet baby's arms. Lay around the shack till the mail train comes back, and I'll roll in my sweet baby's arms. Let's go. Mama was a beauty operator. Sister could weave and could spin. Daddy owned an interest in an old cotton mill. Watch that old money roll in. I'm rolling my sweet baby's arms. I'm rolling my sweet baby's arms. Lay around the shack till the mail train comes back, and I'll roll in my sweet baby's arms. Lay around the shack till the mail train comes back, and I'll roll in my sweet baby's arms.
And that's one of my favorite bluegrass numbers.
Hee-haw. Well, I bet there wasn't a person that didn't have their toes going to that one. That was absolutely great. Now, was the background for that one a karaoke track, or was that your band?
I used a karaoke track for that one, but most of them is my band.
Cool. That's really neat. I just got to thinking about another question that I didn't ask you, and it might be interesting to our listeners. And that would be, is there any other hobby that you have in your life? Do you collect anything, or is there anything else that you do that really brings you enjoyment, relaxation, and entertainment besides music?
Well, I love my computer, of course, and I enjoy baseball and football if it's the Braves and the Jaguars.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, that is the end of the formal interview part, but I would like to give our listeners the opportunity to ask you some questions. And so we'll open the floor up now to anyone who would like to know more about Mr. Slim Short.
I just wanted to say thanks for being interviewed today. Great interview, Slim, and really been enjoying our time in Country Jukebox at night, and just a really sweet guy. I was still Slim, I'm his number one groupie, so love his music.
Nice to see you on here, Jennifer.
Slim, that was a wonderful interview.
Thank you very much, I appreciate it.
Hi, Slim, this is Hallie. I just want to know, how tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
Jennifer is number one, can I be number two?
Certainly.
Why did you want to form your own band?
I have trouble taking orders from other people.
Now, that's what I call brutally honest. Slim, what do you think of country music, the modern-day country music?
I like classic country music better. I think it had better expression. I think the songs were written better. And I think they're trying to inject too much rock into modern country music.
Well, I agree completely. And I'm very familiar with Loris. We love to go to Myrtle Beach, and we go through Loris every time we go to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, you have to blink. If you blink your eyes, you'll miss it.
Slim Flurry up in Boston. Any favorite guitar players that you like in particular? And as far as yourself, do you play any certain kind of guitar?
I think I got most of that. You were sort of breaking up a little bit. I play acoustic guitar and electric guitar, and my favorite guitar pickers would be Chet Atkins and Billy Grammer.
Do you play lead as well as rhythm guitar?
Yeah, I do.
Any other questions before we close?
Hi, Mar. Hi, Slim. Just wanted to say, really enjoyed the interview, and well done, Mar, and well done, Slim. It's great.
Thank you. I'm glad you were here. I appreciate all of you that stopped by.
And thanks to Becky and the Spotlight Committee for, once again, giving me the opportunity to hone my skills as a host for Spotlight. One of these days I'm going to get good at it. I'm going to keep trying. And Slim, it was an honor and privilege to have you here and to have the opportunity to get to know a little more about you. And thanks so much for sharing your wonderful music with us. And you do have your CDs available for sale through the FTP Mall. Is that the way it goes?
I don't think they're on the mall yet. I've mentioned it to Jennifer several times. We're going to work something out where they will be, but I don't have anything on there at this time. And by the way, before I unkey, I'd like to say it's been a pleasure, and you have done a good job, and I've really enjoyed talking with you, Mark.
Well, thanks, and I'm sure that after everybody who has not been exposed to your great music has had the opportunity to hear you, we might have some requests for your music. I would certainly hope so. I know I would certainly like to have some of it in my collection. And thanks again, Slim, and thanks to you, Becky, and everybody else on the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mar, and thank you, Slim. Great job and great interview. And thanks to everyone for coming today. We hope you'll join us back in 2 weeks for someone else in our family in the Spotlight.